Hills versus Westminster may set up for that case. While counsel is setting up, I'll just go over some of the ground rules again, just because I know that there are people in the courtroom who are not here when I did that at 1:30. If you have any cell phones or Blackberries or things that make noise, I'd appreciate it if you would either turn those off or put them on silent. Also, counsel will have 15 minutes per side to argue the case. We have all read the briefs, and at least one of us has read and been through the record. And so we would recommend that you start your arguments with the legal issues in the case. However, the time is yours to do with it what you will, subject to our questions. If the appellant would like to reserve some time, that will be okay, again, subject to questioning by the court. And we're ready to proceed. Also, if you could just make sure you speak into the microphone since we're recording the arguments. And I forgot to mention before, there's a toggle switch on the front of the podium there, which will raise and lower the podium if you need to do that.
Thank you. May it please the court. I'm Jared Balson, registration number 28532. I represent the city of Westminster. This case can be resolved, I believe, on one factual piece of information. The only reason the trial was set on August 3rd is because defense counsel declined the July date.
Was there any evidence that the prosecutor was available on the July date?
Judge,
in the record?
There's nothing indicated in the record, although when we were clearing the date, as the record indicates, the victim was present, and we were checking and clearing the dates with her. And that's why the case was set at different times throughout June 8th transcript, specifically the victim is there.
We don't know if the prosecutor was available on
if we're unavailable,
whatever date it was.
The record doesn't affirmatively include a designation of, Your Honor, that date is acceptable to me. That is true.
What about the fact that, I mean, the defendant had previously said, or defense counsel, he was available on June 1st, 8th, 15th, and 22nd. The court, so the defendant, as far as we know, the record would indicate or suggest, the defendant was available on the 15th and the 22nd within speedy trial. Given those facts, why do we attribute this delay to the defendant?
The 15th or 22nd of what month?
June, sorry.
Okay, all right. I don't recall in the record any offer of a date of June 15th or 22nd.
Yeah, if I can help you, I remember it fairly well. It was when the June 8th trial got set. The defendant gave, it was available every Friday in June except the 29th, as I recall it. The prosecutor trial was set for June 1st. The prosecutor then said the witness wasn't available on that date, and then it got set to June 8th. That was the hearing where the defendant gave this list of dates.
That was the April 11th hearing. And the prosecution, you're correct, obviously, the record does indicate that the prosecution could not accept the date of June 1st. The next available date was June 8th. We didn't have to go into a discussion about any other June dates because everybody was available.
Sure, but my point is, so now we're at June 8th,
yes.
And the court, because of the court's docket congestion, can't hear the case that day.
That's correct.
As far as we know, the defendant is still available on the 15th and the 22nd. There's no effort to set it there.
There's nothing.
The defendant is given one date, and the defendant's not available. Is that alone, when the defendant is available on other dates, your position is it's okay to set beyond speedy trial?
As of June 8th, when we were back in court trying to reset the case, there was nothing in the record to indicate the defense counsel was still available on June 15th or June 22nd.
There's nothing either way.
Exactly right. So when the court was offering the next available date, they offered the next available date, which was, again, the July 6th date. So you're correct. We don't know if the defense was still available for those June dates. It certainly isn't offered by defense counsel as a date that he's available. There's nothing in the record saying, oh, by the way, like I was back in April, I'm still available now that we're in June, now that 2 months more or less has elapsed. I still have these clear dates. They're still available. I can do these cases.
But the court has just told defense counsel the court's first date is July 3rd or whatever it was.
Yes.
So does defense at that point have to stand up and say, when the defense clearly is retaining his speedy trial objection,
yes.
Your position is defense has to say, hey, judge, that's, you know, I'm available on the 15th and the 22nd, even if the judge has said he's not?
I think that defense counsel, to the extent that are available, will offer any dates that are available, as was done in this case. When defense counsel was offered the date of July 6th, he said, I can't do that, but I can do July 13th, and I think the next date offered was the 21st or 27th, something like that. So defense counsel right away, even though the court was offering one date, defense counsel was volunteering, piping up, I do have other available dates. All the dates he was suggesting are outside of the speedy trial argument, even assuming you use a straight 90-day calculation. Straight 90-day calculation would have ended without any delays attributable to the defense, would have ended July 10th. So the court is offering a date within speedy, July 6th, but counsel says, I can't do that, but I can do the 13th.
Well, is that really what happened? I mean, didn't what happened, the defense said, I'm not available on July 6th, and then the court said July 13th, and defendant said, well, I'm available, but I don't waive my objection.
No, sir. That is not what the record indicates. June 8th, the transcript for June 8th, the court does not ever offer a date of July 13th. If you turn to page 7 of the transcript, the court offers Friday, July 6th, everybody. That's line 20. Mr. Brown, line 21. I can't. I can do the 13th, but I can't do the 6th. All right, the court says. Mr. Brown says, I can do the 13th, the 27th. Court, hang on. Let her. Turning to page 8. Oh, Mr. Brown, oh, okay. The court, let's do this by her telling you the available dates. The clerk, the next available date is August 13th. So I don't believe that it was the court suggesting the 13th or the 27th of July. It was the defense counsel who, after being offered a date within, under the worst case scenario of this case, a straight 90-day calculation, the argument rejected in Alley v. Cal, even assuming a 90-day calculation, we're still offering that date.
So then, your position that if the we're in this scenario, say we're at June 8th, and the defendant is available every single day from June 8th until July 10th, let's say it's speedy trial, and the court offers the one day where the defendant is not available, that delay is attributable to the defendant?
Not entirely, but the point of the speedy trial rule in Rule 248, I believe, like the state rules, you cut and carve. You look at the individual pieces of delay. So, for example, looking at the initial 35-day period of delay when we're trying to get the first day set, we offered a series of five dates that the defense counsel couldn't take. We offered the very first that was available to both sides in the case. So I don't believe that, assuming defense counsel is available on every single day for the next 90 days, I think if we offer him, if we're on day zero, waiver of speedy trial, we offer the first available date, day 30. Okay, we have 60 days remaining on trial, speedy trial. But he can't take that. We have lots of attorneys in that position. They're busy. And our shortened muni court speedy trial period is only 90 days. We have, obviously, attorneys coming in who handle state matters. Speedy trial periods are much greater. They're planning events 4 months in the future. So by the time they get to us and handle our condensed time frame, their calendars are full. So he's, as the hypothetical goes, on day 30, defense counsel says, gosh, judge, I don't have any available time, and I'm unavailable for the next 90 days after that first trial, which in effect is the entire time of speedy trial. Then certainly I think that delay is attributable to him.
Well, my hypothetical is a little bit different. I mean, that's the Chavez case, where a defense counsel is not available any day in speedy trial, and the court says, we're going to view that as you asked for continuance. My hypothetical is the reverse. The defendant is available, you got 40 days left. The
right.
defendant is available on 39 of them.
Right.
The court isn't. The court offers the one day where the defendant is not available, and then says, I'm not available. The court then sets it outside of speedy trial. I think where your analysis takes us is that there's no speedy trial violation because the defendant was offered a day within the speedy trial period and didn't take it. Am I misunderstanding your argument?
I don't believe it does away with the speedy trial right at all. I believe...
I'd like you to, and I know you're trying,
yes.
Mr. Balson, but could you answer my question specifically? Would that violate speedy trial in the hypothetical I gave you? 40 days left in speedy trial, Defendant's available on 39 of them. The court offers one within speedy trial, and defendant says, I can't, and then sets it outside.
Right.
Does that violate the defendant's speedy trial rights or not?
I think that depends upon when the date is that's being offered. I don't think there's a hard and fast rule about yes, absolutely, or no, it doesn't. Obviously, the court in your scenarios, I understand it, is offering a date within speedy.
Yes.
The court, it is the burden of the prosecution and the trial court, obviously, to make sure that the speedy trial rights are protected, that there's a record made of how we got to any individual date. So I think it depends upon why there's no available date in the meantime. I believe that if you're offered a date within speedy, in general, then it's not going to be a speedy trial violation. What we're being asked to do in that case is to say, to try to figure out for a defendant, to say, to control a defendant's choice of counsel in some form or fashion, which we have no control over. So when a defendant goes out and hires attorney A, and that attorney happens to be unavailable, the logic that I see of that kind of scenario, if it's automatically a speedy trial violation, is if the defendant hires the right lawyer that happens to be busy, we can never prosecute them.
Although if not available any date, again, Chavez case, then the court's going to say, we're going to consider you to move for continuance because you haven't given us any option. Here, my hypothetical to you is there are other options, and the court happened to pick the one day where the defense isn't available. I'm really trying to figure out the rule you're asking us to adopt.
Sure.
And I'm concerned about it. We have at least some evidence in this record the defendant was available on two other days within speedy trial, at least in April when they said it. The defense counsel said, I'm available on the 15th and the 22nd, which were after June 8th. Doesn't get set there because of the court's docket.
Right.
The court said my first available date is June 6th or 3rd, whatever it was. And I'm concerned about what the rule is. Now, you said maybe the best way to approach it is for you to tell me the fact. You said it depends on the factors on my hypothetical or how we got to that position. What factors do we look at, and what's the rule you're asking us to adopt?
The rule that I'm asking you to adopt is scheduling delays are chargeable to the defense.
Regardless.
Regardless. There are six.
And even if it's the court's docket.
I don't believe it's the court's docket.
Well, the court said I'm not available anywhere between June 8th and July 6th.
That is a somewhat different question. Is a court entitled, in the middle of the speedy trial period, to continue a case? Both sides announced ready. There's no issue of due diligence. We're prepared to go forward. Certainly, the trial court was within its discretion, according to the Vicari case, the Supreme Court case, to grant a continuance under that scenario. So the court did the best it could. It offered the only time it had within speedy. There is no suggestion in the record. There is nothing to say the defense counsel was available. So was he potentially? Yes, he was potentially. There's nothing in the record to support that conclusion.
Well again, you said that, but what we know is at least 2 months before he said I was available on these dates.
Right.
And we don't know that ever changed and no one asked.
True.
Now, you would agree that's the duty of the prosecutor and the court to make the trial happen within speedy trial, would you not?
Yes, it is. And we offered the date within speedy. If I've answered your question, I'll reserve.
I'm sorry, I've monopolized too much of your time, Mr. Balsam.
I just wanted to be able to reserve. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you for your patience.
May it please the court, my name is Michael D. Brown. Registration number is 9648. Please, counsel. I'd like to begin by indicating what a pleasure it is for having this opportunity to address such an important issue as speedy trial and the applicable law to speedy trial, and I'd like to thank the court for that opportunity. I want to jump right into the legal issues of this case because it's our position that there is absolutely no Colorado law that or case that supports the position of the appellant. And I'm going to analyze the cases. It's our position that there is no Colorado law that states that there is an automatic tolling, as a municipal court apparently does, simply by taking a date or a number of dates within speedy trial. There is no law that says if you take a date within speedy trial that you are tolled up to that date. And secondly, there is no case law that even comes close to the facts of this case, where defense counsel, as an officer of the court, the court thought that August 3rd was within speedy. The city thought that August 3rd was in speedy. It was defense counsel that has stood up and said, Judge, August 3rd, we believe, is outside speedy trial. This is a totally different situation than the cases cited by the people.
Mr. Brown,
sure.
How do you distinguish the case of People versus Wilson? I'm looking at it. It looks like it's directly on point factually. How do you distinguish that case?
The situation we have is, as was asked by the questions, is that we have a situation where we don't have any affirmative action by the defense. We have the defendant stating that this is beyond speedy trial. The defense earlier had suggested we have other dates that are available that we can try this case within speedy trial. And here is, I think, the crucial fact.
Excuse me, before you take the next step, can you clarify for us this June 15th, June 22, was that set back in April only and not repeated again on June 8th?
Those dates were mentioned on April the 11th, but these are the dates that are available. Our position is that the court...
was not repeated again on June 8th.
Because the court said our first date, that the court's first date is July the 8th. So no, it was not re-repeated. That's correct.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Sure. The court, after hearing that, Judge, the one date that you gave me doesn't work, had a couple of options. And still protect the rights to speedy trial. Option number one of the court was to say that let's take a look at an earlier date. That may work, and that often is done. That wasn't done, and I'll tell you why in a second. Option number two was for the court to say, Mr. Brown, it's the court's opinion that August the 3rd is outside speedy trial, so we're going to need a waiver from your client to accommodate the request. And that also was never asked on June the 8th. On June the 8th, the court made no effort to accommodate and to try to preserve speedy trial, never suggested an earlier date, and never suggested a waiver of speedy trial, which is very routine. The reason is both the city and the court were mistaken. Both believed that there was this unusual tolling procedure that applied earlier. Both believed that August 3rd was within speedy trial, and it was only defense counsel who was correct that August 3rd wasn't. That's why we don't have a request for a waiver, and that's why we don't have consideration of earlier dates. However, the case of People v. Bell, B-E-L-L, which ironically is cited by the city, stands specifically for the proposition, a case, and I'll just quote, the court mistakenly set speedy trial beyond the six-month limit. The facts more closely resemble People v. Gallegos, where the trial court mistakenly set a trial beyond the six-month deadline and then contacted the defendant and mentioned a waiver. We never even had that in this case. The court never asked for a waiver. The Supreme Court said that was the court's mistake, and they affirmed the dismissal based on speedy trial. And
Mr. Brown, I hate to interrupt, but sure. I asked a specific question as to how this case is distinguishable from People versus Wilson, and I would like an answer to that question. How are the facts in this case different than the facts in those cases in any meaningful manner?
As I recall, and I don't have the Wilson decision in front of me, but as I recall, in People v. Wilson, there was a situation where I'm going from memory. The court can refresh my memory. But there was an acquiescence by defense counsel to the other date. There wasn't a specific objection made on the record.
Actually, there was a motion to dismiss on speedy trial grounds in that case.
Okay, I understand. And again, it's not one of the cases that I brought up. So,
Mr. Brown, I would like an answer to this question as well, so let me help you. The trial was scheduled for November 4th of 96. It happened to be the court had to reschedule it due to docket congestion, set it to December 16th. There were three cases that day. The court heard two of them. One, the very same defense counsel as in Wilson was appearing, so they didn't get to this case, had to postpone it again. The court said, tried to schedule it for January 2nd, one day before speedy, but counsel was on vacation, and then he tried to get another public defender to handle it and couldn't. And then a case got set later, defendant moved to dismiss, and a division of this court held no speedy trial violation. So a date was offered within speedy after a couple of postponements, the defendant was not available, and a division of this court said no speedy trial violation, treated the motion to dismiss as a request for continuance. So that's just a refresh
sure.
memory. Now I'd
right,
like to
I appreciate
answer
that.
Judge Jones's question.
My concern about the Wilson decision is, in this particular case, we specifically advised the court that this is beyond speedy trial. And if you set this beyond speedy trial, we're going to file a motion to dismiss. This isn't a situation where counsel simply did a noncommittal agreement. This is a case where we affirmatively put on the record that this is a violation of speedy trial. And in the cases, it's clear that court congestion is not good cause to continue. And that, so I think there's a major difference. This is the only, our case is the only case that I found where indeed there was a specific affirmative representation made to the court. If you set on August 3rd, we object and we're going to file a motion to dismiss on speedy trial.
Why does that matter, though, when because counsel said that, the court recognized, oh, yes, you are correct. Speedy trial does run before August 3rd. We need to set before that. So the court didn't end up setting a date after that deadline, thinking that it was still within the deadline and knew it was outside the deadline. But it did so because defense counsel was unavailable for the date offered within the deadline. So I guess I'm confused as to why it matters that counsel made this specific objection. The objection was recognized by the court. The court said, oh yeah, you're right, and proceeded from there. In Wilson, there was a specific motion to dismiss based upon speedy trial, which I don't think you can construe as some sort of acquiescence in a trial date. I mean, there was an affirmative act like you have here where counsel says that's outside a speedy trial. So I go back to my question, how does this case differ from Wilson, or is your position that Wilson's just wrong?
Well, it certainly isn't consistent with all the other cases from the Colorado Supreme Court from Bates on down. Let me give you an example, if I could. Is the cases that were cited by the appellant include People v. Bates. In the Bates decision, counsel specifically said that, quote, that is okay with me, the date outside speedy trial. We don't have here. People v. Fetty, and this is really the line of cases. Fortunately, we have a very good decision by Judge Crabtree that analyzes the different lines of cases and held that Tassard v. Yeager, which specifically says that scheduling delays is not grounds to forfeit speedy trial. The cases cited by the people include People v. Fetty. The defense counsel specifically agreed to a date beyond speedy trial. We don't have that here. People v. Luvano, speedy trial was told by defense attorney's request for an application of a deferred judgment, an affirmative. We don't have that. Williamson v. People, delay caused by the defendant's motion to dismiss because we have to brief it. That caused the delay. We don't have that.
Sorry to interrupt you. Right. You said we don't have that a couple of times. Could you respond to Mr. Balson's argument that, and it may have been you at this point, as defense counsel said, I can't make it July 6th, but July 13th, July 20th are okay. Those are outside a speedy trial, and you were offering them. Does that make some difference here?
It does not, because we're still back to the situation where I told the court this is speedy trial. And so, yeah, we do have dates after beyond the one that's available. And normally what the procedure is for the court to say, because they have an obligation to protect the rights of the defendant, then we need a waiver of speedy trial. They never asked for a waiver of speedy trial, despite the fact that it was our position that August 3rd was outside of speedy trial.
So your position is you are being accommodating, telling the court when your schedule worked while preserving your objection? Is that your position?
It is.
All right. And you told the court we're not waiving speedy trial.
So, I did.
So requesting a waiver would have been a little futile. You'd already told the court we're not waiving.
I told the court that, the court never asked for a waiver. What I told the court was, and I guess I'll just quote from the transcript, is that August 3rd is outside speedy trial. That's what I told the court. The court never offered a waiver of speedy trial. So we never said we would or wouldn't waive. Had the court said, Mr. Brown, let's assume that you're right and that August 3rd is outside speedy trial. If that's the date you want, that's fine, but we're going to need an affirmative waiver of speedy trial. And that didn't occur in this case. And this situation is different than each case cited by the appellant, in that those cases, essentially, the defense lawyer sandbagged the court in one way or another. The case of People versus Chavez, defense counsel didn't object to the case beyond speedy trial, was noncommittal. Here, we affirmatively object. In the case of People v. Hammer, the new attorney requested a date. The date was beyond speedy trial, thanked the court for the new date, and then turned around and filed a motion to dismiss. None of those situations apply in this case. We never acquiesced to the August 3rd date, despite the fact that we advised the court that indeed August 3rd was out speedy trial. There are things that the court should have done, but as Judge Crabtree said, a misunderstanding or a misapplication of the law is an abuse of discretion. That was Judge Crabtree's. And Judge Crabtree also ruled that but for the court's own continuance, this case would have gone to trial within speedy trial. So we have a but-for example, and we have a situation that there's a clear abuse of discretion because the transcript is extremely clear that the court misapplied the law. The line of cases that was relied upon by the city are inapplicable. The line of cases from Tassert v. Yeager on are very applicable, where they say over and over, these procedural interruptions are not one of the aspects that justify a tolling of speedy trial. And that is the line of cases that's consistent with the facts before you. Thank you. There's one last thing I would like to mention, if I could. In the city's brief, they suggest that if indeed they lose, and if the case is dismissed, that there's still 5 days left on speedy trial. I just need to make clear that's not the case. If you look at the date of the stay of Judge Crabtree, there is no additional 5 days. So if the there, so basically, I just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Balsam, you have about 3 minutes.
Thank you. For about 45 years now, starting with the Bates decision and going through Fetty, Colantino, Lovleno, Williamson, the court has repeatedly said, the Supreme Court, in its decisions, scheduling delays to accommodate the defense attorney's schedule are not attributable and are excludable from the speedy trial provision. In this court's decision in the Alley v. Cal case, this court specifically went back and looked at, these are specific dates that you caused the delay, and those are excluded, even though they're towards the front end of the speedy trial period. In one of the Supreme Court cases, in the Colantino case, one of the questions put forth, or one of the answers by the Supreme Court was along these lines. What, in the eyes of the Supreme Court, are situations in which the defendant clearly caused the delay? This is how the issue was framed by the Supreme Court. They cited Bates, request by defense counsel for a later trial date when the trial judge had proposed an earlier date within the prescribed period. That, to the eyes of the Supreme Court, is a case where clearly the defendant caused the delay. The delay was caused by the defendant at the beginning of the case. There's that 35-day period, and so August 3rd is within. But again, even
assuming... How do you square that with Tassett?
Tassett
was
yes.
An issue where 5 dates are proposed, or some number, defendants are never available. The court says that's not the kind of delay envisioned by the rule.
Tassett is not a Rule 248 case, first of all. Secondly, as Chavez points out, that case turned in part on the prosecution sought a continuance.
No question that that's true. But the court, and it may be dicta, made the statement, this is not the kind of delay that just in scheduling it, defendant's not available.
And counsel's brief says that that's an off-sided position from that case. Not a single case cites Tassett for that proposition, either in the Court of Appeals or in the Supreme Court. Not a single case follows that quote and brings it forward, as opposed to the Bates decision, which quotes the exact language at issue here and is supported by the reaffirmation 5 other times by the Colorado Supreme Court in its Colantino, Fetty, and Lovleno cases. So Alley is a specific case on point. Look, go throughout all the delays in the case, figure out which ones are attributable to defense. So Alley v. Cal is certainly a good case. Lovleno, Supreme Court, they do the exact same thing. They go in, they look at the past 6 months, they cut and carve. This time period, this delay is attributable to the defense. The Williamson case, they do the exact same thing. So we're not looking at a straight 90-day calculation. July 3rd was a date, even in the worst-case scenario, 90-day straight calculation that was available. The defendant, there is nothing in the record to support the idea that defense counsel was still available. He immediately offered and chimed in with dates that he could manage the case. I believe that to be an important distinguishing factor in the case. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you for your arguments. Opinion in the case will issue in due course. I believe that completes our docket for this afternoon.